everyone today? Good? Are you really? Or are you just saying that because I asked in a peppy voice? Yeah? All right. Good. Well, hey, for those of you who don't know me, it's your first time here. I'm Kelly Smith. I'm lead pastor here at Grace. Happy to be here this morning. Happy to be able to share this Sunday with you guys, to be together and have this community together. We are continuing on in our sermon series called Not a Fan. And this sermon series is really looking at what it means to follow God. And to understand, are we just kind of like liking God, liking the whole Jesus thing, and it feels nice inside? Or are we actually following him with our lives? And so we started the sermon series 2 weeks ago by talking, are you a fan or are you a follower? Do you just say, I kind of admire what Jesus did and like it? Or do I give him my life, everything inside of me? Do I give it over to him fully and completely in all things? And that's the difference between being a fan or being a follower. And then last week we talked about that once you understand you have to choose between being a fan or a follower, there is this open invitation that's been given to everyone. Everyone, that you have an open invitation to follow Jesus with your life. And the beautiful part of it is, it doesn't matter where you are or were. Being a follower of Christ has nothing to do with where you're at or where you were in your life. It has to do with where you're going. It has to do with your future. It has to do with how your life is changed in Christ. It's an open invitation to be made new, to be made into God's image, to follow him with your life and become like him, to have him heal you and restore you and change who you've been into who you could be in him. And so this open invitation is open to everyone, to all peoples. But you have to understand there's a difference between being a fan in that invitation or being a follower. And so today, we're going to go a step deeper and say, you need to understand if you're a follower, then something has to happen in your life. And what that difference is you're getting intimate. Now this word intimate has a connotation that we go automatically kind of start thinking about physical intimacy. Where we start going, okay, a husband and wife are intimate. But having intimacy really means that you're joined together on a deeper level. That it's not just surface stuff, that it's joined together. And the reality is you can tell really quickly when people struggle with intimacy. If you don't believe me, take a chance sometime. Go look at some awkward family photos. Who has ever seen those awkward family photos? The best thing ever, right? But you can tell right away who's struggling with intimacy in that group. And here's a few examples. Can you guess which one of these people struggles with intimacy with the rest of them? All the smiles and then jean jacket bad boy sitting there, right? Tell me about this one. Can you guess who doesn't like maybe physical intimacy there, yeah? It's a good picture. Another one here. Guess which kid doesn't quite fit in. Doesn't really feel like connecting the rest. And this one is perfect. You can tell right away who does not feel like intimacy really isn't my thing. I'm going to back off a little bit, right? The reason that people struggle sometimes with intimacy is not because of that person, but because of something inside. Because here's really what intimacy is. Intimacy equals vulnerability. If you want to be intimate with someone, you have to be vulnerable to them. It means they see the best of you and they see the worst of you. If me and my wife get together and I sat there and went, all we're going to talk about is fantasy football, she wouldn't know me from anyone. She would really know who my team is and how we're doing and struggling a little bit, but she wouldn't know me at all because I wouldn't be sharing anything from the inside. I wouldn't be showing her who I am. She would just be knowing the surface me. Why? Because if I'm intimate with her, it means I have to be vulnerable with her. It means I have to sit there and go, I open myself up to you. And intimacy, to be honest, is a very difficult thing. Vulnerability is a very difficult thing. Because when you put yourself out there and you make yourself vulnerable, you open yourself up to whatever else may come because of that. Now I get up here every week and I share with you guys and talk about, let me tell you stories of my life and different things that's happened.
It's easy, to be honest, to tell you those stories. Why? Because most of them happened a long time ago. And it's a different me. It's much tougher. I'm like, let me tell you a story about what happened last week. Because now I'm sharing with you right now where I'm at in my life, vulnerability. I'm going to share something with you. Last week I went out. I was going out to Washington State. That's why I wasn't preaching last week. Went out to go to a conference. Go to this big conference that I've been trying to go to for 2 years with Andy Stanley, the Irresistible Tour. I was so excited. It lined up perfectly. I was flying out to Seattle for it because 2 days later my brother was getting married an hour and a half north of there. And I'm like, perfect. I get to go see my brother married. I get to go to this conference. It's going to be awesome. Except I didn't make the conference because I spent the night in the hospital. And I spent the night in the hospital because we thought I was having a heart attack. And it was not fun. It felt like my chest was going to blow up. My heart was racing. I had a lot of pressure. I couldn't breathe. And I was all alone in a hotel room. And I went, boy, I wonder if I should go to the hospital. And part of me went, I'm just going to go ahead and sleep through this. And then I woke up and went, if I die in the middle of the night, my wife will kill me. Right? And so I said, I'm going to go to the hospital. So I headed to the hospital. And I was in the hospital and I was pretty sure I wasn't sure if I was going to make it, to be honest. It was tough. And it ended up, my heart's fine. Perfect. In fact, the doctor did all my numbers. He ran my sugars and everything. And he said, you know, everything looks really good. I'm a little surprised. I'm like, for a big guy, you wouldn't expect it. I'm like, but I work out every morning. And my heart's in great shape. It took forever to me due to the stress test because I couldn't get my heart rate up because I'm used to working my heart. He said, you're perfect healthy. Guess what? You're dealing with anxiety. You had a panic attack. You were in the hospital because you were letting this world get to you in the stress. And the reality is that's true. There's a lot of things happening in life that are stressful for me right now. But it had less to do with stress. I'm not overworked at church or anything. It had to do with me starting to try and take on the weight of this world in my own life. And I recognize that that's not my job to take on the weight of this world. God can do it. I can't. And if I try and do God's job, I'm going to fail. If I try and worry about everything that God has under his control, I'm worrying for nothing. But it was a good moment for me. And I'll tell you right now, I'm in a good place. I'm not okay. I still get little breaths where I have to slow myself down and say, okay, look, Kelly, slow down. And I'm struggling with it a little bit. And it's really, really difficult to admit this to you guys. Because it's something that is now an issue in my life, and it's a struggle for me. And I don't want it to be a struggle for me. But if I don't share with you, guess what? I'm sitting up here going, you can do this, come on, let's go. And the whole time I'm struggling to go, boy, I can't do this. And I recognize I need to lean on God more in those moments. I need to be more intimate with God. I need to be more vulnerable with him. And I need to have more of him in me. So today we're going to be talking about being more intimate. Being more vulnerable. And one of the best examples that I've seen in the Bible of being intimate, of being vulnerable with someone, is the story we're going to look at today. It's called The Story of Two Debtors. But it really has nothing to do with debt in terms of the story. But it's called The Story of Two Debtors because of what a parable Jesus uses. So I'm going to start out and looking in Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 39. It says this: one of the Pharisees asked Jesus to have dinner with him. So Jesus went to his home and sat down to eat. When a certain immoral woman from that city heard he was eating there, she brought a beautiful alabaster jar filled with expensive perfume. Then she knelt behind him at his feet, weeping. Her tears fell on his feet, and she wiped them off with her hair. Then she kept kissing his feet and putting perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him in saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman is touching him. She's a sinner. Now the words that were used here for this woman being a sinner is she was a known sinner. And the kind of sin she had was detestable. She was known to be immoral. And the connotation of what it's saying is this woman was a prostitute. that she was known by many men in this area, that everyone knew she was a prostitute, and that that was the life she lived. It would be like walking down the street and seeing someone standing there like this, and you go, I'm guessing I might know what's going on here. I'm guessing I'm in a red light district. This is a little tough. Now think about this. This Pharisee invites Jesus into his home to talk to him, to listen to him, maybe to challenge him. We don't know exactly. But there's this woman there who's a prostitute who starts coming down to his feet and kneeling behind him. And her tears are dropping on his feet. And she's wiping them off with her hair. And she's kissing his feet. And she's pouring this expensive perfume on him. This is not a person who's not being vulnerable with Jesus. This is a person who's laying out everything she has for him. Now, many times when we read this story, and I know when I first read it too, I assumed that they were having dinner and this woman came in and met Jesus for the first time. But if you start looking through the certain words that are used, you start to realize this woman has already had some kind of encounter with Jesus. She knew he was coming. And she knew that he was coming, and she brought her most expensive perfume. She had already had her life touched by him in some way that she came and had to let him know how much she loved him. She came and had to share that with Jesus. We start seeing this more in the next verse. It says in Luke 7, 40-42, then Jesus answered his thoughts to Simon, where he said, you know, if he knew who this woman was. He said, Simon, said to the Pharisee, I have something to say to you. Go ahead, teacher, Simon replied. Then Jesus told him a story. A man loaned money to two people, 500 pieces of silver to one and 50 pieces to the other. But neither of them could repay him. So he kindly forgave them both, canceling their debts. Who do you suppose loved him more after that? And Simon answered, I suppose the one for whom he canceled the larger debt. See, Jesus is starting to say, Simon, I know your thoughts. You're sitting here looking at this woman going, she's a prostitute. She's a sinner. Think about this. A woman in this society came down and started kissing his feet, who is a known prostitute. This is, if this happened today, we would freak out. But in that day, this was beyond measure. This was crazy. This is horrible. Oh my gosh, everyone's sitting there like, she's making a horrible, horrible display here. She's making a scene. She shouldn't touch him at all. She is defiled. And now she's touching this guy who we see as a teacher. And it was, I can imagine in that room, it's silent. And everyone's going, what the heck is he going to do? Because Jesus had every right and every authority to say, get away from me. Don't touch me. You are a sinner. You are unclean. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened at all. In fact, Jesus tells the story to Simon. And then he goes on to chastise him. And he says this in the following verse. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, look at this woman kneeling here. When I entered your home, you didn't offer me water to wash the dust from my feet, but she has washed them with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't greet me with a kiss, but from the first time I came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet. You neglected the courtesy of olive oil to anoint my head, but she has anointed my feet with rare. See, to understand this, you have to understand the custom of that day. And the custom of that day is when you brought a guest into your home, hospitality was everything. If someone came and they were alone and came, you would not leave them alone in your house for a minute. If you left them alone at all, it showed disrespect to them. It was very important how you took care of guests. To the point where when they would go to sleep in their room, and we can't fathom this as Westerners, but when they went to sleep in the room, you would send some of your sons to lay in the same room so they wouldn't feel alone in a home they didn't know. They would be in that room so they feel comforted, and they knew that they were cared And so when you walked into a house, there were three things that happened almost every single time. The first was you would greet them with a kiss. And it would either be a kiss on the cheek or a kiss on the hand or a kiss with the nose. And you gave them that kiss as a welcome to them to show, we are close. You are welcome to my home. Anything I have is yours. We care for each other. This still happens in the Middle East today. When you greet someone, many times you will either greet them, you'll put your right hand on their right shoulder and kiss them on the right cheek, then your left hand on their left shoulder and kiss them on the cheek, or you'll go in and you'll go real quick and go to touch their nose, and right when you're about ready to touch, you pull your head away to show we're that close to each other. Guys, go up to someone you know, touch your noses together, see how comfortable that is. Right, Bob? I'm looking at you. It is uncomfortable. It's intimate. You get this close to someone, you better feel comfortable with them, right? But that was how you show you're welcome in my home. Whatever I have is yours. Let me welcome you with a kiss. And then think about it. They would offer you water to wash your feet off, to rinse them off. Why? You've been walking everywhere. And guess what? Those streets aren't necessarily clean. Your feet are filthy. So you'd wash them off so you felt welcome, because then you would take, and you'd have your shoes off, and you would sit there, and if you were cross-legged or doing different things, you wouldn't have your shoes that were getting in. Your feet would be there, and you didn't want to get their carpet dirty. You didn't want to make their area dirty. You wanted to feel refreshed. You would have this water to clean you off. And then finally, they would pour a little bit of inexpensive olive oil on you to anoint you, to say, welcome, may God bless you in my home. But when Jesus showed up at the Pharisee's house, none of these things happened. He came in, there was no kiss. He was not offered water to rinse his feet. And he was given no oil to anoint his head. And so he came in, and he's sitting there. And there's speculation as to why this happened, but the most common belief or understanding from what we see is when Jesus came in, this Pharisee sat there and went, this guy, not too sure about him. He's a teacher. I want to learn from him and kind of see what he has to say. But there's no relationship here. If I offer him all these things that saying I believe everything he says, that's not really the case. So he welcomed into his home, you can have dinner with me, but you're kind of below me. And this is how the owner of this house, this Pharisee, saw Jesus. So Jesus comes in, and none of these things are offered. And we start seeing in this story the difference between a fan of Jesus and a follower of Jesus. Because this guy, this Pharisee, he was kind of a fan of Jesus. Hey, come in my home. I want to learn some stuff. Let's see what you have to say. But this woman, she was a follower of Jesus. In fact, if you look at what she says, you can see that he's already had experience with her. He's already had something that she's coming in, not because it's the first time meeting him, but because she's so in love with what he's done for her that she can't help but bow at his feet and show him that love, show him that intimacy. And this is where we see the difference from fan and follower. A fan wants knowledge. I come to church. I want to hear what's in the Bible. A fan goes, I'm going to maybe do a Bible study. I'm going to read the Bible. I'm going to check things out. I want some knowledge. I want some stuff. There's nothing wrong with Bible studies. There's nothing wrong with coming to church. But if your sole reason is just to kind of find out, guess what? You're a fan. You're a fan of Jesus. And you're like going, I kind of like this stuff. But a follower wants intimacy. A follower wants intimacy with the Lord and Savior of this universe. I don't want to just know about him. I want him to know me, and I want to know him. I want to have not just a knowledge of him, but an understanding of him. And you can do all these different things. You can read the Bible. You can do this. You can understand God and have knowledge of him. And all of that's great. But guess what? Knowledge means nothing without intimacy. You can be the greatest Bible scholar in the world, but if you don't have intimacy and love for God and a relationship, it means nothing. It says even the demons know Jesus. Even the demons know God, but that doesn't mean they love him. They have knowledge of him. There's walk around this world and have knowledge of Jesus, knowledge of God. But it doesn't mean there's a relationship with Him. We don't want to know about God. We want to know God. And we want to have intimacy with God. Now, intimacy really means this. Intimacy means a close familiarity or friendship. But really, it means just closeness. The closer you get to someone, the more intimate you become with them. The more I know my wife, the more I know her past and her present and her fears and her failures and what she hopes for, the more I know her, the more I come closer to her, the more I can love her. Not because of those things necessarily, not in spite of those things, but it's because who she is. And I love her even more because of it. So intimacy means a closeness together. And the word in the Bible that describes this better than any other word is this word here. That is not how it looked on my computer. I will have to reformat that for second service. Apparently the computer didn't like it. But the word is yada. People say yada, but it's actually, that's yada yada yada, right? Not that. Yada. And this word yada means to know. To know someone, not to know of them, but to know them. This word yada actually means multiple things, that you know someone so close. It said in the garden that Adam, yada, knew Eve. Knew her. And it's talking about different things. It's talking first about understanding that he had an intimate physical relationship, but also an intimate relationship that was not just physical, was also emotional, knew her so much they were as one. They were joined together because they knew each other. This word actually comes from a root word. And every word in Middle Eastern languages, in Arabic, Hebrew, and stuff, usually come from a three-letter root. And the three-letter root for this is yad. And yad simply means your hand. It means your hand. And your hand has what's in it, strength and power and something you can hold on to. So yad means a hand, means strength, means to grasp. It's what's in your hand. You add an H onto that word, and you make it Y-A-D-A-H, that sound. Yada, and it's longer, it means to release from your hand and to lift out up to God. It's the word for praise. Because you're releasing it up to God and you're letting Him know that the strength is no longer yours. You're giving it to Him. You praise and worship God. That's the word. This word, yada, just Y-A-D-A, means that it's in your hand and you're releasing it to someone. And it's an understanding that they're releasing back to you. And it's understanding that I'm not holding on to anything anymore. I release it fully. To have intimacy with God means I'm not holding on to it. Means I don't try and control it. Means I don't think that I can do it better than you can. I release it to you. Opening your hand. Knowing God. He knows you because He sees everything in you. And He's giving Himself back to you. And there's an intimacy there. A closeness. A nearness with each other. This story finishes by showing what that intimacy is. And Jesus says, I tell you, her sins, and there are many, have been forgiven. So she has shown me much love. But a person who is forgiven little shows only little love. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. See, Jesus had already forgiven her sins. This is part of that story of going, we believe that beforehand he had met her. There was an experience she had with Jesus. And he forgave her for what she had done. And she was so broken that he would forgive all of that. That she had no choice but to worship at his feet. To wash his feet with her tears. To anoint him with the most expensive perfume she had. To kiss them to say, I give you everything. You have given me life. You have freed me from my sins. She had been forgiven so much that She had no choice but to pour out so much love. Now, you could look at this verse and say, well, look, so if I haven't done much and I've only been forgiven some, well, then that's probably why I don't love Jesus as much, because he hasn't forgiven me. The reality is, the more you understand how forgiveness works, the more you realize what you've been forgiven for, the greater your love starts becoming for God. Because when I recognize it's not just God saying, hey, Kelly, you know what? You went through the red light. I forgive you, and I go, thank you. I'll probably do it again. If I think that's what forgiveness means, I think I've been forgiven for this much. So my love in return probably isn't that much. When I recognize that God's forgiven me for absolutely being his enemy, for being against the creator of the universe, for being so broken that I've destroyed my relationship with the creator, and despite all of that, despite how broken and how horrible and how dark I am inside sometimes, he chooses to love me anyways and forgive me. What choice do I have but to love him with everything? He's forgiven me for so much, more than I can ever love him back. My answer should be complete devotion, complete love. My answer should be wanting to be close with God. So I put the question to you as well. Do you want intimacy with God? Do you want to be so close to your Creator that you hand everything to him with an open hand, and he's giving you back complete forgiveness, and it's working together, and he's offered it and said, here it is, and you say, then here's my life. Do you want that intimacy with God, where your heart breaks for the world because you see him, you see the world with his eyes, where you recognize what he's done for you? Do you want that intimacy? Do you want yada? Do you want to know God so closely that it's as a husband loves his wife, that there's this intimacy together of knowledge and love? Do you want that? Do you want to be a follower? Are we comfortable being fans of God? Are we comfortable to sit there and go, I like what God's done, but it's on my terms. I like what God's done for me when it's convenient. Do we want to be a fan, or do we want to be a follower of him? For every Christian, this is a question you have to wrestle with at some point in your life. Have I really opened up my hand to God? Have I really released everything? And I tell you what, you may have that moment where you recognize, I want to follow God with everything. And guess what? And you open up your hand. But I guarantee you've got something to the side over here still closed up. I know I do. I still do it in my life. And sometimes I think I'm opening my hands, and then later I look over and I'm like, what the? And, you know, and it's sitting there. And I go, I didn't even recognize that I was keeping that for myself, that that was still me trying to be in charge of things. I don't want that anymore in my life. I don't want to have closed fists hiding things around. I want to open them to God. I want us to truly be intimate with God, where we release it all. Where we turn away from being fans. Where we become followers. And that requires a real intimacy. That requires a real life in him. And I pray that's what all of us either continue to strive for, or maybe start to strive for it. We sit there and go, that's the life I want. I don't want to be the Pharisee. I don't want to be the guy in there sitting there like, come on, let me learn about you. I want to be that woman who recognizes the depth of her depravity, who recognizes her brokenness, and is bowing at his feet, kissing them, saying, God, thank you. Thank you for forgiving me. I belong to you fully. I pray that's what we, as a church, continue to become followers of Jesus. Let's go ahead and pray together. Dear Father in heaven, Lord, we come to you today. As always, before I ask anything, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for loving us. Thank you for choosing us. Thank you that despite us being your enemy, you want us. You forgive us. God, I don't know if we can truly understand what that's taken for you to create a way that sin can be paid for so that we can be in your presence, God. That you've changed the cosmos, that you've come to die for us so that we could have a relationship with you. God, I pray we don't take that gift and just throw it away. I pray that we come to you with open hands, open hearts, that we give it over to you, that we become intimate in the nature with you that we didn't understand could be. That it's not just talking to you every once in a while. It's not just every once in a while coming to church. It's none of those things. It is on our knees with you. Communication with you. A life with you in all things. That as you know us inside and out, we seek to know your heart. And that your heart becomes our heart. Lord, I pray we would continue to seek to be followers, true followers of who you want us to be. That we would grow in you every single day, God. We pray these things in your holy name.